You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 29th of January 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say today, on the day after Holocaust Remembrance Day, we have revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager with us from carolynyeager.net and jan27.org to talk about the aforementioned Holohoax Remembrance Day. Carolyn, good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well, Sven. Thank you.
Did you get a chance to watch any of this? I was, unfortunately, I caught quite a bit of it, and I actually had to switch it off. There was a god-awful noise was coming out of the television, and it was, I think it was a rabbi. He was just wailing and wailing, and, you know, I had to laugh at all the politicians there, you know, trying to look solemn. It must have literally been painful for them to hear all of this. And on top of that, I also saw a survivor on BBC Breakfast, and she totally demolished the story of the liberation of Auschwitz. She said all the Soviet pictures that they took, they were fake. There was no children there. They weren't wearing clothes like that. It wasn't snowing. And while she was saying all of this, the BBC had cut lovingly to these pictures of the liberation of Auschwitz, with all the video, with them all there with the barbed wire, and her voice is over the top of it saying, this is all, it's all fake, it's all fake, and the Soviets told me it was fake. And that one really did make me laugh. But anyway, yes, what are your views on this, Carolyn? What did you make of it?
Sven, I have to ask you what the BBC presenters there had to say when she was telling them it was all fake. What did they do?
They couldn't really do anything. That's what I mean. They just cut to the video. They cut to the video, okay. showing what was happening, because you could see they just didn't know what to say. Really funny.
My overall impression for this year is very positive for our side of truth, because I think it didn't go over well at all. I think it's falling apart. And they're just looking foolish. I agree with you. I thought the same thing about the world dignitaries who were there in the audience. They say this year the survivors did most of the talking, and I saw a few clips of the survivors giving their speeches. Awful, just awful. And I think, what do these dignitaries from around the world think when they hear this? They must just be cringing, you know, and it's not impressive at all. I look for news of it, you know, in general, how it was portrayed. And they've always dutifully, the news media has always dutifully put it at least one story at the top of their news on this one day, even if not before they run some things, but to give credence to the myth that they're all a part of upholding. But this year, no. This year there was too much other news that they just were not willing to give up on. And as I said to you earlier, God bless Kobe Bryant. I mean, that would not go over well with a lot of fans. But I'm not a sports fan, and I didn't move me one way or the other. What happened to Kobe Bryant? It's too bad. But he had his deadly accident the day before, on the eve of the Holocaust Remembrance Day. And I'm telling you, people care, all the people who might care about that Holocaust Day or read about it, care a whole lot more about Kobe Bryant than they do about that. And that just knocked everything off. Plus, there's all kinds of big news. The coronavirus, the impeachment trial in the U.S., and a few other things that I can't think of right now that are just converging at this time and place. And it just knocked the Holocaust Day out down to the bottom, if you ask me. And that's where I would find it. All these news media had a story, but it was way down. You know, it wasn't at the top, except Deutsche Welle, the German loyal national broadcaster or whatever they are, who feels that I think they feel more strongly than Israel that they need to prop this thing up all the time. They need to support it because of all their guilt. And with that, I refer listeners to my latest post at CarolynJaeger.net, which is titled, What's Wrong with Germans? President Steinmeier exemplifies it perfectly. And there's a picture there that was actually run at Deutsche Welle. I picked it up from there. In their, I think it was the opinion piece by this opinion writer there who was praising him for his speech at the Holocaust Forum on the 23rd. And he's bowing in front of these floral arrangements, which are there to honor the survivors, I guess, you know, and the whole Holocaust deal. And he's bowing low like the most abject, pathetic slave. I mean, you have to see the picture. And this is how he wants Germans to behave and react to this. He's telling them that this is our duty to do this, and it's just disgusting. So
idolatry. It's idolatry, so isn't this, it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's worshiping them.
It is
worshiping the Holocaust. I say, I wish the BBC had been as good as obviously the American news companies were, because they forced us to watch this all day long. And I was thinking, you know, people that switch this on must just be scratching their heads and saying, why is all this importance placed upon this? And they had a big shelter over Auschwitz, and mm-hmm. you know, almost like a concert with lighting and all of this. And I'm thinking, well, it was just a camp where the Jews were made to do manual labor. But one question I did have, Carolyn, they said about they all went to the gas chambers, the ruins of the gas chambers, and they were talking about how the gas chambers were actually blown up by the evil Nazis before they left. Now, I always thought that in Auschwitz they had like something that was supposed to be a gas chamber with two holes in the roof and wooden doors. And the evil Nazis were supposed to be throwing cyanide pellets through these holes in the roof that the Soviets put in the roof after the war. So what was this building that they were claiming was the ruined gas chamber? Do you know?
Well, there's several. There's, see, at the Auschwitz one, the most people are completely confused. If you haven't been there personally, which I have, but I understood the layout before that. But if people who don't study it, you know, the majority of people hear just a little bit, and what they hear, they forget. And what they are taught in school, they forget because they're not paying attention. And so their impression is just, oh, this was, you know, horrible. These people were treated terrible. They were all exterminated in gas chambers. But they don't know any details, so they believe anything they hear. So the gas chambers, there was supposedly one. The gas chambers are in buildings that were actually crematoriums. There's never any doubt that there were crematoriums at many of the camps, but not all of them. Not the ones in the east, because people were not far east, the so-called Action Reinhardt camps, where now they want to say the majority of the Jews were killed there because they can't prove they were killed elsewhere. But they weren't. They didn't even have any crematoriums there, which they admit they didn't have any. So therefore, they had to burn them all. And pyres. I mean, the whole thing is impossible. But anyway, so now they still cling to this idea that there are gas chambers in these crematoriums. And the way that they said they operated, these were actually rooms next to the through the cremation ovens, because they cremated people, because when they died, it was easier to cremate them than to bury them. And they also, most of them died from typhus and other diseases. And there was a high water table and all these reasons. So, you know, they needed to cremate them. So they built crematoriums there to do the proper thing, you know, and be sanitary and so on and prevent death. And so now they had these rooms next to them, which were cold, and they were morgues. And then this is what afterwards the fabricators said, this is where they gassed the people. And they made up these stories about how they put gas in there. And the best they could come up with was that they had holes in the roof, and they dropped this cyanide pellets down in there, and they melted, and they put out all this gas and killed the people. And they did this, you know, 10 times a day with thousands of people, and in order to get up to these huge numbers they have. So there was one crematory in Auschwitz I, which is a camp that everybody visits that thinks of in terms of Auschwitz. And then there were four of them in Birkenau, because that was a much larger camp that was kind of a holding camp and an exchange camp, and people came and went and so on. And this is not the way it's portrayed, but these were the demolished ones, but they were the remains of the two of them there, the two main ones that were there longest, the first ones that were built there, are still there. And they have looked at them and discovered, gone down into the ruins. Back in the days when you could do that, you can't do it now. They're very, they have things roped off, plus they have guards, and they have lots of rules that they didn't used to have. And people just went in there and looked around as they wanted. And that's when the revisionists discovered all this stuff. And they found that there were no holes there. And the ones in the one crematorium that people look at in the main Auschwitz camp, the one that is with the brick barracks and all, it has holes there, but you can see they were put in later. And that's been even admitted that the Russians rebuilt that and redid that building after they took control there. And this was not the original building. They changed the roof from a peaked roof to a flat roof so that they could say that the guards went up there and, you know, walked on the roof and so on. And they put these holes in there, and they did a sloppy job. Sloppy. And you can see that these were not original, that this was all done, and all kinds of things. You talked about the door, you know, in this one so-called gas chamber that they show to people. It's got these wooden doors. And one of our articles at the at January27.org, which I would encourage everyone to go to, and there's a new, brand new article by Guillermo Rudolph, who's a great, great revisionist. And it's first published here. It's never been published before. He's going to publish it elsewhere, but not until after a while. And so it's a new information that we're putting out there, and about an architect who studied the blueprints, because the blueprints of that building have survived, the original blueprints, showing that the walls, the particular walls that the doors of the morgue, which they call the gas chamber, are placed in, were extra thin walls. They're only one layer of bricks instead of two wide, you know, two thick, only one brick thick walls. And that they still are, and they were then, and they could not possibly hold these heavy metal, gas-tight doors that survivors, these phony survivors who say, oh, yeah, there were these big, heavy doors, and they'd shut them, and you'd hear them click them, lock them, and all this stuff. They never had those doors, because the walls show that were there show that they could never support these type of doors. So Guillermo Rudolph got that information, and he wrote this article about it, and it's on the site now. It's under the title of the thin walls of Crematorium One at Auschwitz, something like that. That's just one. This is the kind of proof that last thing I want to say here. This is the kind of proof that the revisionists present versus the kind of nonsense that doesn't even make sense to people. And they never explain that the Holocaust believers present, and that survivors, that these people who say they were there and they were all these things happened, spout out and claim things that, if you can get to the facts of the matter, cannot possibly have been true.
Well, one of the other things that the so-called survivors were talking about was how horrific it was to have their hair shaved, and all their hair was shaved, and it was just so that they could use it to put in mattresses. And it was like, well, hang on a minute. What about the typhus lice? The whole point of the shaving of the heads was so that they didn't have lice. That was the same reason why they were given new shoes and new clothing. It wasn't about stuffing mattresses with human hair. And yet the people that are interviewing them just lap all this up, and they don't point that out. But another thing that they made a big point of was something that they called the wall of death. And they said that this wall, there were thousands of Jews that were shot up against this wall. And, you know, I thought, well, they probably did have execution there. They probably did have a firing squad if people broke the rules in Auschwitz. But I thought it's probably more likely that the SS officers were lined up against the wall and shot by the Soviets. Do you know anything about this wall of death that they make a big thing of, Carolyn?
Well, yes, you're right about the fact that it was a place where some people were executed, because in a camp of that size, you know, the inmates killed one another. I mean, it's the inmates did, you know, they were all in these barracks, and they, you know, you can imagine that they didn't get along. And so they did a lot of terrible things to one another. And the SS actually was determined to exercise strict control in these camps, and everybody had to follow the rules so that it wouldn't be turned into chaos. And so when they did things that were serious against one another, and it was all in the barracks. And let me tell you that the SS did not go into the barracks where the inmates were. They never went in there. So these stories that the SS walked in there and did this and that and all are all false. And that's why they assigned capos, or people who were in charge, you know, of particular barracks. And they were often, it's true, were often harsh and showed favoritism and so on. And they'd get into disagreements. But they tried to keep that down. Some of these people who were executed were probably capos who were misusing their authority so badly. And they didn't mess around, you know. They had a prison there for people for that reason. And they also executed a few people, but they didn't execute prisoners just to kill them. There was no intention. The intention was always, I don't hate to keep repeating this, was to get work done, to use them for labor. That's what they wanted. And they didn't want to, didn't have an extermination program, which everything points to. But so BBC is really shameless. You know, after Israel and Germany, Britain is the worst, for different reasons than with the Germans, who are convinced that they support their regime by being anti-Nazi. They don't want nationalism because they're not nationalists, and so but the British are still trying to make themselves look like heroes by believing this Holocaust story, and why Germany had to be destroyed like it was, and the United States too. They had to absolutely destroy Germany to destroy this Nazi regime because they were so fanatical, you know, and that's the only way they could do it, to bring freedom to the world. It's all fake as can be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And, you know, I mean, they had to come up with some kind of an excuse for destroying half of Europe. And the people that were presiding over the trials at the Nuremberg trials, it was Britain, America, and the Soviets. The Soviet Union is now Russia. So Britain, America, and Russia, they see it as being in their interests to keep this illusion going, because otherwise they will be blamed for prosecuting this war. You can point out the role that the Jews had in it, but essentially it was America, Britain, and the Soviet Union that went to war against Germany, and that were there in that court that presided over that kangaroo court that was Nuremberg, that came up with these fantasy tales that were just hastily put together, which we can tell from looking at it now, because they're not logistically possible to systematically gas all these Jews, which is what we are told. And so they have so much invested in this and in making it into almost like a religion, so that everybody has to go along with it, everybody has to have faith in it, everybody has to believe the 6 million number. While this was on the BBC News, on the ticker tape there, it was alternating, and it was saying 1 million Jews killed at Auschwitz, and then the next thing that would come up on the ticker tape, 6 million Jews systematically killed by the Nazis. And you think, well, hang on a minute, didn't they say that there were 6 million originally killed at Auschwitz, and then it went to 4 million, and then it went to 1 million, and yet we've still got this 6 million number? You know, isn't that part of it as well, Carolyn? Didn't they revise the numbers down for the people killed at Auschwitz?
Yes, they did. And you know, the very best website to go to get the clear truth and the true revisionist story, by the best revisionists, not by all the little stuff that you hear, you know, afterwards. And everybody's got their own way of saying things. The best place to go is January27.org and JAN27.org, because that is what we call the committee who has put this together. And this is the true revisionist truth about the whole thing, although it's focused on Auschwitz alone, just to make it clear, because they have spread the Holocaust out, and they're continuing to do so, trying to put it all over the place so that you can't ever, you know, nobody can ever really get hold of it in their mind. And you prove something wrong here, and then they say, well, but over here they did this. So they're spreading it all around. But this really does show you that this is the best place to go to get the honest to God right story and the details right and so on. But from there, what I want to say is that I want to emphasize that I think they really fell flat this year, because, you know, they're celebrating the 75th anniversary of this so-called liberation of Auschwitz, which is supposedly was the beginning of the end of the Holocaust. See, because they separate, they got World War II, and then you've got the Holocaust. And the Holocaust is bigger and being supported more today by the victors of World War II than winning the war is, you know. Why? Because the Jews are behind it so much. And that is why. That just shows, even though it's not only the Jews, they've got all these other, you know, they've got these nations supporting it for their own reasons. But if it wasn't for the Jews, it wouldn't be. They wouldn't still be going on and on the way they do, but people are tuning out. And it showed this year that it just was not up to the current stories that are going on that people are interested in. And I think that they don't have anything to draw anyone. They use these survivors. And they played up the survivors this year. And the man who is really the man behind the scenes in this particular January 27th, Remembrance Day, is Ronald Lauder. Ronald Lauder, the son of Estee Lauder, the billionaire who is president, chairman, or whatever, of the World Jewish Congress. And they are the main supporters and pushers to keep this Holocaust Remembrance Day going. And I saw a video they had. He was at Auschwitz. He is the one who brought all the survivors there. I think he sponsors it and pays for it. He gets a ton of money from the World Jewish Congress, but he also gets these governments to chip in. And also, I don't think he has to spend his own money. He's got plenty, though. But he was behind bringing all the survivors, and he plays up the survivors thinking that's the most powerful selling point that they have. But really, they're not. Of course, I don't have the same perspective as most of the gullible people out there who don't know anything about it. But they are so old and they're so stupid, and they look blank. They don't know what they're doing or saying, and they're repeating the same things that they've said, you know, since 1970 or so, you know, the same unbelievable things. And he thinks that this is going to convince people. So this year at this thing that you watched on BBC, they had these speeches by these survivors, and they must be, the people in the audience, as we already said, must have been just dumbfounded because they were so awful. Lauder then was at Auschwitz, and DW had a little video of an interview with him, and he was in a bad mood, and he kind of, you know, he looked miserable. He said people are not remembering enough. He was complaining about anti-Semitism and how we have to, the governments of the world have to support this movement against anti-Semitism. That's his real concern. That's always been their concern. And they need to put more money into it, and they need to support it. And they have all these governments with their representatives there, but he said, and probably truthfully so, they give lip service to it, but they don't do anything. They don't do enough. And this is something that I harp on, that the whole thing that the Jews want is to get the governments to pay. He said, we need to pass more laws. We need to stop the hate speech on the internet. It's the internet where all this hatred is and all this, Holocaust denial is going on. We need to stamp down on that. He was saying those things, and he was grumpy looking and grouchy looking. I don't think he's reaching anybody that way, but it shows that they're not happy. People like him are not happy with the way things are going, and they keep trying to get these governments to do what they want them to do, which is what Jews have always done. And this made me happy. And the fact that at our website, January27.org, we had the best year ever since we've done this little commemoration of our own. And we don't have the publicity at all of, that they have. And we drew more people and more readers than ever. And I think that's it's all looking good, but it's a struggle because they are very, very powerful. But one of the key thing that Lauder said was speeches are not going to stop anti-Semitism. So he was very grouchy about that. He wants more than speeches. And we need to see that our governments do not censor us further than they already have. They want censorship. The Jews want censorship. We talked about Putin last week, and Putin did speak at that forum in Israel on the 23rd, the Holocaust forum, but it wasn't, he didn't go to Auschwitz, but he spoke there, and people should read his speech. I've got some notes here about his speech, but I don't have time to quote him now. I wanted to get to him, but he's very much in line with with the story that the BBC puts out. And I mean, he's just plain lying out of his teeth when he says these things, just like all the rest of them are. So I think people should be careful about thinking that Putin is doing anything good there. He is a good nationalist for Russia. And I do give him credit for that. But at the same time, when it comes to Holocaust, which is my number one issue, really, truth about Germany, he is terrible. And he's as bad as anybody else, and he lies and puts out all these Russian lies, as bad as what they said at Nuremberg, back in 1946. So he hasn't advanced from that at all, and he thinks that's what he needs to do to get credit for Russia. And everybody, as I said last week, wants to get credit for their own country at the expense of the National Socialists. So my final word.
Well, we can see how credible the Russian documentary proof is from that survivor that said that it was all faked on the BBC. All the videos are faked. I mean, that just gives us a taste of what Putin's archive from the Second World War is going to be like. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Karen. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.